Yeah, well, I think this story's probably the craziest of all and probably the closest I've ever come to death in the bush. Apart from, of course, a bull falling on my tent or many of the other things that seem to happen. But yeah, I had six students out. They had been there, most of them from the States. They had been there maybe 3-4 days. And we were setting up a camera trap survey, so we had about 30 camera traps, and we had the two bosses with us for a little bit, just because we wanted to make sure we had this camera trap survey set up properly. And we had this Land Rover, beautiful second-hand but new Land Rover that had just been bought for the project. And it had a cab on the front. It had no sunshade on the back, and all the sides had been taken off. There were two bench seats put higher up on the back, so we had the six students in the back, and then I had a set of sliding windows behind me in the driver's cabin so that I could communicate with the students. And of course we're all excited, and the students are, you know, they've got their GoPros and their cameras and their hats and their sun cream and everything else. And we had quite a time getting into camp when we came from Maun. This is again in the Kwai area, because we'd met a bull in musk on a sandy road where it was impossible to do anything but just sit still. And that was quite terrifying because he was really screaming at us, as elephants do. But a female came in, and so he was diverted. His attention was diverted. So, you know, it was still very new for everyone there. And I had one Swiss student who was just amazing, and he had actually just completed his field guiding course in South Africa. So he was, you know, a bit more used to things, and he'd been there a couple more days than this group from the uni that had just arrived for the study abroad. So we're doing our last camera traps before lunch, and it's a predator ID trap. So that's where you have two camera traps facing each other, just offset, so that you're going to catch both sides of the predator so that you can ID it later. And the two bosses say their farewells. We've come in two separate cars, and they're going to head back to Maun, which is a 5-hour drive away, and we're probably about 4 kilometers from camp, same camp as where I had the lion at my door. So we finish the camera traps, we get in the car, and we're heading back to camp. Now, this is the delta, it's the quiet area, but it's pretty sandy. And there's a couple of things that you always know, is that, you know, if you're coming round these bendy, sandy roads, you've got to be quite prepared for what's going to be around there, because you're often in four-wheel drive, which obviously doesn't allow for any fast movements. And also, you can't reverse down sandy tracks that are winding. It's just not possible. And the elephants had been on edge for a couple of weeks, so I had already made a, you know, unanimous decision that we were not going to approach elephants within 100 metres, which is a big distance, because they seemed to be on edge, something was upsetting them, we didn't know what. There'd been several reports from some of the camps nearby that the elephants were in a sort of strange mood. So we're all in the car, and interestingly enough, the bosses had said, you know, one of the students should always be in the front with me, and they should swap around so that I get to teach them, and they get to ask direct questions and have one-on-one time with me as an instructor. And of course, it's second or third day, and the students are like, please, Magog, we want to sit in the back of the car. So no one was in the front with me, thank goodness. I don't think they probably would have come out of this alive, but as it was, we were all absolutely fine. So we all in the car, six students in the back, three on each seat, and you know, two of them were wearing GoPros, one of them had a GoPro around his neck, not one of the GoPros was turned on, and off we head. And next thing, we see elephants crossing in front of us. And actually, because since then we obviously had to do the police report, so we've measured everything. So the elephants were crossing about 80 meters in front of us. So I stopped the car, turned the engine off, just sat and waited. And the elephants were in a hurry to get down to the river. So, you know, they run with their tails out and their ears are out, and they're all excited, and they got this sort of fast-paced walk that they're going down to the river because they're so excited to get to the water. And they kind of don't take any notice of us. And the next thing, this young male, sort of teenager, appears from the right-hand side, so the driver's side, and he comes tearing in at us and looks like he's going to charge us. So I'm got my hand out the window, I'm slapping the side of the car, I'm shouting at him, stop, you know, because this is how you speak to elephants when they're misbehaving, you know, like a misbehaving child. Stop right there, what are you doing? And I'm saying to the students, don't worry guys, don't worry, he's just, you know, it's a mock charge, he's fine, just stay calm, don't get out of the car. So he pulls up short, you know, only a meter from the window, and the road level is slightly lower than the bank level, you know, it's kind of come in like that. So he feels so huge, even though he's not that big an elephant. And he stops and, you know, he's kicked up the dust a bit, and I'm telling everyone, don't worry, it's fine, elephants don't charge cars. So he backs off, and then he comes at us again, and I'm yelling and I'm slamming the side of the car, and he stops again. And then he kind of thinks about it, and you can hear the other elephants now, you know, starting to trumpet. And I, interestingly enough, I don't ever recall this elephant of ours trumpeting, although some of the students do recall that. So I'm not 100% sure, you know, this is a funny thing where memory comes in. Anyway, so then he decided to cross diagonally in front of the car. And he headed off down the road. So I thought, oh, well, that's good. He's heading off. And then suddenly he just turned around and he charged at us and he slammed into the car. So I'm saying to the students, hang on, don't worry. It's okay. He's given himself a fright. He's going to go. You know, elephants don't really charge cars. I don't think he planned this. Everything's fine. You know, and we're all in a bit of shock, to be honest. But I'm, you know, I guess all my guide instincts have kicked in. Anyway, he turns around and he heads off back down the road, kind of a high-footed gait, and gets a bit, you know, 5-10 meters down, and turns around and comes at us again and hits us again. Then he goes to do the same thing. He turns around, goes off down the road, and when he turns, I think, ah, I'm not doing this. So I take the car out. I'd already taken the car out of four-wheel drive. I put it in reverse. I started the car, and I put my foot down. Now, this is where, you know, it kind of gets a bit hazy. What I think happened is that the elephant caught the front of the car and he lifted the front wheel, so kind of on his tusks. You could see the marks in the car where this happened. Now he's pushing backwards, but I'm reversing. And I remember looking at my Odo and we were going 40 kph, that is. But then, of course, I also realized we were no longer on the road and at some point we were going to hit a tree. Now, I think then what happened is the elephant lost interest. He stopped. I was still reversing. But suddenly I hit a tree. So that we came to an abrupt standstill, but the elephant still had forward momentum. So there was nothing he could do to stop himself coming in through the windscreen. Now, my memory of this elephant coming through the windscreen is that I was totally and utterly focused on his left-hand tusk, and I saw it about to smash the windscreen, because if you remember, the Land Rover had a cabin, but it didn't have a back. And I remember focusing on that left point of its tusk and watching it almost in slow motion as it splintered the windscreen and the spider cracks as the windscreen shattered. And I thought, if I don't duck, that tusk is going to go through my head. So I ducked, and the tusk caught the top of my hat, which to this day has a hole in it. I've stitched on an elephant patch where the tusk went through, and it took the hat off my head and the roof off the Land Rover, the whole of the cab roof off the Land Rover. Now, interestingly for the students, what they remember is focusing on the elephant's right-hand tusk, because its head would have been at a bit of an angle. And the right-hand tusk went into the seat on my left, on the passenger side. So between me and would have been the passenger. Now, the students from behind could only assume that tusk had gone through me, which it actually hadn't. It went into the seat. Then the elephant pulled back, and I was still shouting to the students, do not get out of the car. It's absolutely fine. Just hang in there. Just keep doing what I'm saying. And thank God for our Swiss student who really kept his cool and learnt all remembered all of his training. So the elephant then came round the passenger side of the car, which is the left-hand side of the car. And if you remember, we're a right-hand drive in Botswana. And he started smashing into that. Now, if you look at the photos, you can see on the driver's side there are tusk marks through the door. I don't ever recall when that happened. At no point do I recall the elephant being on my right-hand side. So I think he must have done that when he pulled out from the windshield, came to the right, put his tusk through, then went to the passenger side on the left. It's the only pattern I can think, because now he's on the left-hand side, on the passenger side, and he's smashing things up a bit, and he starts to tilt the car, so he's trying to roll it. So at this point, I shout to the students, right, everybody out of the car, although, to be honest, we were at a 70-degree angle, so there wasn't really much chance of us not getting out of the car. I don't know how I got out, whether I got out through the window of the driver's door or I opened the door. Everybody else kind of just fell out because, you know, you're on these bench seats. And I said, right, Dave, take these students. So Dave took three of the students and managed to get, and again, we had measured this for the police report, around 40 meters away. And the elephant, I guess, with the fact that it had punctured the diesel tank and turned out the battery acid, it had broken the battery open because my shirt was almost eaten away by battery acid, which I never felt and never saw it until we were back in camp. Then I managed to get the rest of the students, and by this time the elephant then dropped the car. So we were hiding in the bush 5 meters behind the vehicle, and the elephant lifted the car and put it on top of a tree stump. Now, that elephant knew we were in that bush, absolutely knew we were in there. But I think a couple of things. One, we were all wearing camouflage clothing. Now, whether that helped or not, I don't know. But I would like to think that it kind of obstructed his vision. The second thing is that the smell of the diesel would have put him off. And so I was just a hand on everyone, my hand laid across knees, just really keeping everyone's heartbeat low, just hang in there. And you could hear the other elephants calling and trumpeting, and this one was calling back. Then I do remember trumpets. And then finally this elephant, you know, after he smashed up the car for what felt like 10, 15 minutes, but I'm not entirely sure how long, trotted off, high gait, you know, ears open, and off he went. You know, and so we kind of waited, you know, a good 20 minutes, and then I called everybody back to the car, and we thought, oh my God, that's crazy. And, you know, this is now when shock kind of kicked in, because we, you know, first off, I got everyone together, and I got everyone to put the hats on and sun cream on, and of course I was wearing some student's hat now, and I didn't know where my hat was, and but everyone was kind of not really with it. So I got everyone back into the smashed up car, and there we all sat in the glaring sun. And I thought, what? What am I doing, Holly Magog? Right, everybody out the car, go sit in the shade. So we all piled out the car and we sat in the shade, and, you know, everything was a bit smashed up and people were kind of getting their stuff together, and, you know, got on the radio, got on the sat phone. But we just couldn't get hold of anyone. And now it's sort of 4 o'clock, and I'm thinking, well, we can't be out here in dark, and we're sort of 5-6 kilometers from camp, maybe 4 or 5 kilometers from camp, and we're going to have to walk back. So I tell everyone, right, we all need to walk back, single file, please don't carry anything more than you absolutely need, leave everything here, we will come back to the site, we will get everything we need to walk back. So then, you know, again, you see these sort of effects of shock, because I suddenly thought, oh my goodness, we don't have any food in camp, which of course we did. I better collect up the picnic. Now, the picnic was spaghetti salad, which doesn't sound divine, does it? But I went round and, you know, the spaghetti salad had spilt, not everywhere. There were like 2 big clumps. So I sort of dusted the clumps off and put them back in the bowl and put that back in the vehicle, thinking we'll come back and get those. And got everyone in line, and then I turn around and I see one of the students is cutting up his credit card with a machete. I say, what are you doing? And he said, well, I can't leave it here, the elephants will get it. And you know, it's just not safe here. I said, but you have put it in your pocket. And he said, well, you told us we can't carry anything. And I said, well, you know, a credit card's not very heavy. It's not going to affect you. All right, well, you've cut it up now. Not much we can do. Right, everybody ready? You know, get your binoculars, because that's always useful on a bushwalk. Are we all together? And then I turn around and this same student is now dousing himself in diesel from the diesel tank, which is still leaking. Again, what are you doing? And he said, well, in Jurassic Park, when the dinosaurs are chasing, you put diesel on you and then they can't smell you, so they don't chase you. But it really is the shock talking, you know, that's what happens. So anyway, off we set, and we had barely gone a kilometre when this huge herd of elephant coming down to the water again in this excited gait. So I got everyone under the croton bush and we all sat there quietly in the elephants all went past, and then I suddenly heard an engine. And so I, you know, got up, and coming down the road is the Land Rover from the other camp, which was about an hour away. And it, you know, they decided to come for a cup of tea. And I said to them, but did you see our car? Because it's totally smashed up. And I'd left a note, written, handwritten note on the bonnet to say what had happened. And if anybody came across the car, we were walking home and please come and find us. And they said, oh, yeah. Yeah, we saw the car, but we didn't pull over. I just thought, that's so mad. You see this smashed up car in the bush and you don't even pull over. But anyway, great that you're here. So we all piled into their open Land Rover. It was a work car, so, you know, it wasn't a tourist car. So it was literally an open Land Rover, none of the top half of the body. We drive back to our accident site, we collect all our belongings, and then we head back to camp. And it was a bit of a mission to get to camp. There were a lot of elephants, as they usually are at that time, because they're coming down to the water and the river. And by now it's sort of 5:30, and it's sort of, you know, late afternoon, and the shadows are long, and we're all a bit nervous and everything. So we get back to camp, and I, you know, managed to radio to Maun, and I tell the bosses what have happened. So they've just jumped in their car to come all the way back, but they're sending the medevac helicopter. So Okavango Air Rescue arrives, and this is when we knew that actually none of us were too injured, because the hottest medic you have ever seen came out of that helicopter, and all of us girls who suddenly felt all these illnesses and pains, and, you know, we all thought we had to be checked out because he was just so good looking, and we knew that we were all absolutely fine. I think Dave was the only one who really got hurt, in the sense that when the car collided with a tree in reverse, he had taken the brunt of it, although there was a spare tire which had absorbed most of the impact, but he had a bit of a bad back for a while. And anyway, so the medic checked us all over and ended up staying the night, and had all sorts of theories as to why this, you know, elephant had attacked us, because it also wasn't a proper charge. You know, he never exhibited any of the signs of a proper charge. And, you know, they talked about how there'd been such bad poaching in Mozambique just before, and, you know, a lot of these elephants migrate down from Mozambique, from Angola. And a lot of them come down from Angola to the panhandle, and then down to Kwai from that area. So it could have been part of that. It could have been that the matriarch had been killed. It could have been that this elephant had just, you know, been annoyed, had lost, you know, it was a vandal, or, you know, some of the lodge people thought that the elephants had been feeding on a plant that was making them go a bit crazy, and others thought that there was a new elephant herd in the area that was making them all go crazy. And in fact, in the 2 weeks after our event, two other cars also got rolled. Whether it was the same one or not, I don't know. But anyway, so the medic stayed the night. And of course, then we had to put dinner on, and I'm also cooking. So I thought, oh, well, we have our spaghetti. So I'll clean that off. So I rinsed it in the water and remade a dressing. And served it, and everyone's thinking, oh, this is a bit sandy, you know, bits of sand between their teeth, and that's all right, we'll wash it down with water. And it wasn't until the morning when I looked and realised it was all smashed bits of glass, tiny bits of glass, so we'd eaten all this glass with our spaghetti, which was a bit ridiculous. Anyway, you know, it was all a crazy event, and one of the maddest, I think, was that, you know, all of us girls, by the next morning, every one of us had started our period. So I think that's a trauma-induced period, which was pretty crazy. But yeah, we were all absolutely fine and no injuries. The car was a write-off that had to go to the dump site, or, you know, bits of it rescued. We did take time out of the bush and then we went up north to Kasani. But yeah, it's a crazy story, but it's also a story one can really learn from, because, I mean, for whatever reason this elephant might have done this, you know, the one thing that is increasing is human-wildlife conflict, and especially in Botswana, human-elephant conflict. You know, certainly there's a lot of places where the elephants are coming into closer contact more frequently with humans in a way that's not positive. You know, either the elephants are learning to raid campgrounds of fruit and veggies, so they're learning to approach cars because they know what's in them, what sorts of foods people bring camping with them, or sadly the government doesn't have the best land distribution in allowing people to farm, so people are farming on migratory corridors, or at least corridors where elephants are moving, and then of course they're going to raid the farms. So, you know, it's good to know this, but it's also really good to be able to learn to read behavior, you know, the ethology of elephants, and why is an elephant going to charge, and what are the signs that show it's going to charge. And I think for all of the students that were with me in this event, you know, one thing that we've come out of it is that we all have slightly different memories. Certainly one of the ladies remembers that this elephant was a female, and she vividly recalls seeing mammary glands, but I'm 100% sure it was a male. But you know, we didn't track this elephant, so we've no way of absolutely saying, and not one person had their GoPro on, despite the thing that the whole event took 30 minutes. So pretty crazy, but we've learned a lot from it, and I know that under pressure I managed to react very well, and we're all still here and telling a tale, and some struggled with a little bit of PTSD in the form that, you know, loud noises or sort of high impact causes an adrenaline. And one lady was on not a good type of malarial treatment or prophylactic, which caused larium, which caused more problems. But in the long run, we're all good, and it's all a good story, and we're all here, and we've survived, and it's a mad story.